The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack. Search billions of prices on flights, hotels, and cars with one simple search, feeling confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Hello and welcome to Why Golf, brought to you by Skyscanner. I'm here at the glorious Sunningdale Heath Golf Club, one of the most welcoming courses in the UK. Today I'll be chatting to former England rugby player and former Lions player Anthony Watson about his love for golf and why he always wants to be hitting the fairway. Let's go find him. So Anthony, you've just got back from Australia and I saw on social media the flight was 8,000 hours long. It took you a long time. Do you enjoy flying?
I mean, the way out there I enjoyed. It seemed like a break from the kids. And then the way back, 30 hours was just way too long. There's not enough distractions for that amount of time.
There's no joy, is there?
No,
so what do you do with yourself? Do you watch movies?
I tried watching a movie, nothing got me interested. So yeah. I watched like 30 minutes of one, then was on my phone, then the Wi-Fi wasn't working.
Oh, no.
My head had exploded, honestly. I was just done.
And plain food?
Yeah, no. I mean,
did
it tastes nice,
it?
But then it messes up your stomach. And
yeah.
Then I was just like...
How much of a treat were you to spend time with the day that you landed?
Did
you say to your other half, I'm not going to be a great person today because I'm so tired?
I wasn't that bad, you know.
Oh, like, good.
I tried
good.
To get ahead of the sleep schedule on the flight. So I tried to sleep when I was supposed to sleep according to like UK times. So then I actually got back at like 6:45 and I went to sleep at like 9:10. So I wasn't too bad.
Oh, well
I can't,
done.
Yeah, so.
It's a really difficult flight, but obviously such a high in Australia with a series win. How was your whole experience out there?
I mean, when I signed up to do it, I didn't think I'd be drinking every day for 3 weeks. I wasn't.
And what was your drink of choice?
Tequila ginger ale.
This is a new one.
It was very aggressive.
Did Ugo Monier introduce you to this?
Well, we tried tequila and all sorts, and then we stuck with tequila and ginger ale.
I see which path you're going down there.
Yeah.
It's actually all right. I can imagine that's okay.
It was nice.
Yeah.
It was nice. Occasionally, we had to mix up with just soda water, because after 5 ginger ales, your sugar's through the roof, and after 3 weeks doing that,
that's true. You need a bit of saturated fat to make it, you know, to level yourself out. You can have a bit of cheese with that,
exactly.
Maybe. But you had a good time. You had a few good nights out there.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Look, I think, especially from experiencing the Lions Tour 4 years ago with no fans, for them to go and experience it and be in and around them in a totally different experience from playing was amazing. And I think for me, it really highlighted how important and integral that the fans are to that whole Lions experience, because like I said, 4 years ago, it just wasn't right, you know, like it felt like a big key part of the tour was missing, you know, playing in some of the biggest games of your life, running out there and there's no fans. And then you contrast it with being able to sit in the stand now and watch them run out at the MCG in front of 100,000 fans. And it was like, yeah, this is what Lions tours are about. And yeah, it was just brilliant to be able to do it on the other side of things, you know.
I can only imagine. I mean, because when you played in 2021 when there were no fans, did it just feel pretty, I don't know, quite a bit hollow?
Yeah, do you know what, when that whole period started, I didn't mind it, because it was like, it was rugby in its purest form, you know. There was none of all the extra stuff, you know. There wasn't like you had to go do corporate stuff after the game. You would literally rock up, play rugby and go home. It was like when you're a kid again, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then after a while, you know, when you get to the big games, especially like semi-finals, finals, that's when you feed off the crowd, and that type of environment becomes more important, in my opinion. And yeah, like the Lions Tour, biggest games of your life and there's no fans. It was just like, it is hollow. And even being able to explore the country, you know, is a big part of Lions tours, and we weren't able to leave the hotel really. So, I mean, there was a golf course on the hotel, which did entertain
play?
A fair few of us, yes. But then,
were you allowed to touch the rakes? Because I remember during COVID, do not touch the rakes.
I think the rules in South Africa were slightly looser
different.
Around the golf course.
I never understood that though. I was like, oh, wait, so I have to disinfect the rake when I've touched it.
Yeah, mental, wasn't it?
But you did manage to play a bit of golf though in South Africa.
We did, yeah.
Oh, great.
We did. But I remember once we were actually supposed to go to a lion sanctuary, and this was right at the start of the tour, and they said, oh, you can go to the lion sanctuary, but you have to take one of the team cars and you got to wear a mask and you can't put the windows down. And I was like, might as well go on YouTube. Like, what's the point of going?
That's just ridiculous.
Honestly, it was nuts.
Yeah,
was nuts.
I think some of the rules went a bit crazy, didn't they? But everyone trying to protect, but it was a bit too much. Did you miss not being able to play this one?
I missed when the squad was announced. I missed it then.
Yeah.
Because that's just such a, you know, an unreal moment. And fortunately enough, I had experienced it twice before. So like being able to reflect on that and how good it felt in the moment, I was like, oh, I would love to have felt that again. But at the same time, you know, everyone has to retire at some point. And if I keep thinking about, oh, do I miss it or do I not? It's just going to mess up my head. So I'm just trying to go with the flow and, you know, just deal with every day as it comes.
Yeah, I think that's a really good philosophy though. And things have sprung up since, which is great. And you were hanging out with Ugo Monya in Down Under. Is he, what, he's one of your best mates, is he? Or
yeah, he is definitely. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
we all speak highly of Ugo. He's a great guy. Yeah. Cheeky chappy.
Yeah, he's 10 years my senior, so
he's really old.
Yeah.
Ugo, you're really old.
Yeah, it's over for him now. But he took me under his wing. You know, he's obviously been in and around those environments and knows how to handle those situations. So,
because you spent a lot of time together, considering you were together a lot in Australia, did anything about him annoy you? Did you?
But he would definitely say, I know what he would say if you asked him this question about me. He would say, one, my timekeeping was terrible. Which is debatable.
How late?
You know, if he said meet in the lobby at 2, I might be there at 5 past 2. You know, there's a
okay.
Do you know what I mean?
It's
there's
okay.
a bit of a
yeah.
flex.
I was thinking half 2 would be not great. But.
Yeah. But then I was quite slow to cotton on to things. Like, for example, there was loads of fans in this convention centre. And, you know, to get a break, Ugo would say to me, oh, look, we've got to go film something. Because he wanted to go hide for 5 minutes to catch
his
breath. Of
course, which is, you should clock onto that immediately.
Which I didn't. And I said, we don't have to film anything, mate.
So
he wasn't too happy with me continuously doing that.
No, but we do.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
just had a last minute call from a film crew.
Exactly. So I was slightly slow.
That's probably
what annoyed him the most.
Oh, that's brilliant. And just in terms of, you know, your career and what you've been through and all, you know, brilliant things that you've achieved. 56 caps for England, 23 tries, a couple of Lions tours. What else? World Cups?
World Cup final.
There we go. Reminders of the year?
2019.
Yeah. Still think about that at all?
Yeah, 2nd of November 2019.
Okay, it's ingrained. It's like literally ingrained in the brain.
Yeah.
But I want to highlight all the brilliant things you've achieved. And, you know, over the last 12 months, there's been a huge change. You retired from rugby in January. Can you just tell us about that and why you had to retire?
Yeah, my back was it was completely cooked, to be honest with you. Like, I played in a game in December 24 and I couldn't sit down on the bus on the way to the game. And, you know, it was just to the point where it was like, this is so much mental stimulation and physical simulation just to be able to get on the training pitch, let alone playing, that when it got to that game and I couldn't sit down on the bus, I was like, this is absolutely berserk. And like I said, I'm really grateful that I had, in my opinion, one of the best surgeons and consultants I'd worked through throughout my whole career looking at my back. And he was like, look, unless you know want to get multiple fusions in your spine at 30 years old and risk XYZ, then you need to retire. So I think when it's taken out of your hands like that, it makes it a bit easier from my perspective, because there's nothing more I could have done. And I know that I would have probably taken it to the nth degree of risk before I called it myself. So it's part and parcel of the game. You know, I'm happy-ish with what I was able to do in my career, and now it's just, you know, priorities shift, don't they? So it's nothing to be sad or anything about. Everyone
Absolutely
has to retire.
Not, no. Yeah. You should celebrate everything that you've achieved in your career. And, you know, there was a period in your rugby career where there were no injuries. There was, you know, you were invincible till like 2016 and thought you could, you know, carry on.
Yeah.
And I know you've said you felt a lot of the time that you could just bounce back quite quickly, but it was probably imperative back then to take a little bit of time out rather than having a longer stretch of rugby taken out when you did get a serious injury. Was it, is it difficult as a rugby player to say, oh, I'm not going to play for a bit because
a
niggle going on?
Yeah, I never, ever, I don't think across my whole career I ever pulled out of a game before, once I'd put on my boots to warm up for the game, I never pulled out of a game because I hated it.
You didn't want to?
No,
no.
I hated it.
You didn't
want
to let anyone down?
No, exactly. In fact, I don't think I ever pulled out of a game without being ruled out of a game. Like, I never went to the coach and said I can't play because I just, I don't know, I felt like I, like you said, I didn't want to let anyone down. And if you're selected to do a job, I feel like, and by the way, that is 100% not the right way to do things.
Like, but it also shows what kind of person you are, the kind of dedication, loyalty to a team. And I think everyone around you knows that. They know what person you are if you say you're going to do something that you stick to.
Yeah,
it.
So,
but in sport, it's different, isn't it? You've got to look after your body.
Yeah, I think if I was speaking to, you know, a younger athlete, I would definitely try and get them to move their mindset towards, actually, you're looking after the team more by you being available next week and the week after and the week after that than risking it all for one game. But when you're in it, you just feel like the game that's right in front of you is the biggest game, when actually there's so much more to come and there's so many bigger games that follow that. I think it's just about trying to move that needle, I guess, if that makes sense.
I want to keep highlighting how brilliant you are, and you should celebrate all the fab things that you've done in your career. And I know your brothers would say the same thing. You've got two brothers, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you're the middle child syndrome at
all? Definitely, 100%. I'm not ashamed to say that.
What does that mean? What define middle child syndrome?
I think that
I'm the baby of four, you see. So
are you?
I can tell you about being the baby.
Okay. Yeah. I think the oldest gets all the privileges, especially in a Nigerian family. The oldest, you know, whenever an uncle comes over, they used to give you some money.
Right, all right.
Yeah, which was obviously really nice. So the oldest would get, Marcus would get £100.
Amazing.
Great.
Middle child, you'd also get
£100. No. Middle child, you get 20.
No.
Youngest, you're getting a fiver.
Oh, no.
I swear, it's ruthless like
that's
that.
That's not fair.
No, I know.
I would feel, you know...
Hard done by, yeah.
Really hard done by. Were you saying to Marcus, can you, you know...
Man, there was no chance.
Oh.
And then the youngest, obviously, he gets all the... It's never his fault. He never did anything wrong, so... I've either got to fight up or fight down.
And oh, really?
I just fought both.
Did you get into lots of trouble?
I did get into a lot of trouble, to be fair. I wasn't horrendous. I wasn't great at... My concentration span was never the best. And so at school, I was regularly sent out.
Were you? You probably wanted to be playing sport, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I did. I just wanted to be outside, and I didn't have the foresight to realise how important that side of growing up is. Luckily, I managed to... Turn it around. I wasn't horrendous. I was just like, not class clown either. I just couldn't sit still.
Wanting to do other things.
Yeah,
so totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think you need really good teachers as well. Sometimes you get a bit bored in lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
I definitely did.
Exactly.
I was, can you stop talking, Di, at the back? Quite a lot. I was, oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, I am. And now I work in broadcasting, so I can talk a lot,
there
which is great. So
perfect transition.
Maybe it was telling the teachers something. Absolutely. But what was it like growing up in your family? I know your dad was away quite a lot, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Your mum did everything for you, for all of you, driving you left, right and centre.
Yeah.
She gave up a lot.
Yeah. My mum held it down. I don't know how she did it, to be fair. Like, she's not from here. So she moved over when I was three, she was here properly. My older brother would have been six. And then my youngest brother would have just been born. So, like, to move over to a new country where everything, from Nigeria, which is obviously very different, with three kids on your own, and have to take them to all these different places, and she's the worst driver ever.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, terrible. She won't drive at night, even to this day. On the motorway, she don't drive. So she had to do it
to
take us to sport. So that type of sacrifice, like, oh, my mum is, no one can touch. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
she's just held
absolutely.
In a different regard. And then, yeah, I mean, look, my dad was away, but whenever he was there, he was the first to take us to sport. And he was always like, made sure we realized how important it was to not just and this is just my philosophy, rightly or wrongly, but he always instilled in us not just to show up. You're not there just to make up the numbers. You're there to try and compete and to win. And I think that was a really important lesson to get early on as a young boy. And yeah, he was amazing. Yeah.
With your mum, you obviously learnt that, you know, she was willing to give everything, which is what you are as well. Mm. Do you speak to your mum a lot and your dad still?
Oh, 100%.
All the time, every day?
Yeah, I speak to my mum every day. I mean, she lives 10 minutes down the road now, so it's absolutely perfect. If I don't speak to her, I'll see her. And if in Australia, I didn't call her for 2-3 days and she was absolutely fuming.
What's her name?
Vivian.
Vivian.
Yeah,
Vivian, I'm going to make sure he calls you.
And then my
call
dad.
Call her after this.
Yeah, 100%. But then my dad is like, I don't know. He's almost like my best mate now. Like I'd call him for any advice on anything. I mean, he's still always my dad, isn't he? But he's just as much one of my closest mates as he is my dad, you know? So
that's so lovely. And what's he said about your sort of life after announcing your retirement? Mm. And how have you found it in terms of, you know, that identity? Because a lot of sort of sportsmen and women, when they retire, it's like, what is my identity now? Yeah. And do you feel quite comfortable with it?
Yeah, I do feel comfortable with it. I mean, my dad was one of the ones who was pushing me before the surgeon even said it. He was like, you really need to start thinking about this, because he obviously saw how much pain I was in. And, you know, with two kids at home, he was like, you can't keep, you know, risking your future. You know, he said that there's two things in your body you can't really mess with. One's your back, and obviously your brain, your head is the other one. So I was like, kind of got to think about that. But in terms of the identity piece, look, I think that, you know, people talk about athletes being forced to retire as like mini deaths type thing, which is obviously a bit aggressive. But if that's the case, then I feel like I'd almost died like 10 times because of how much rugby I missed, being injured, you know, all the things that come with retirement come with being injured as well. You know, people forget about you. You're not in the limelight. You know, you've got to kind of reshift your focus. So I kind of had dealt with that so many times that I know what this feeling is like. Do you know what I mean? And I just think that, you know, rugby is, or sport in general, is just such a small part of who you are, even if you are a professional, that to let it consume you and that's all you're ever going to be, I think is so short-lived and almost pointless, to be honest.
This episode of Why Golf is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack. I use it to plan trips while saving loads of time and money. Honestly, it's a bit like getting a great swing tip and suddenly everything just clicks. Sometimes I've got a destination in mind. Other times I just want to dream where I'll golf next with their Explore Everywhere tool. Either way, Skyscanner gives me the lay of the land very quickly. Instead of juggling 25 tabs, incognito mode, and bouncing around a dozen sites for weeks, Skyscanner searches billions of sites all in one place. Flights, hotels, car hire, with one simple search. No tricks, no hidden fees. It's my go-to travel tool that helps me plan, book, and save like a travel pro. So whether you're flying to a course you've always wanted to play, or looking to escape for a weekend and save big, download Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack today. So throughout your rugby career, I'm sure golf crept in there, because it seems like lots of rugby players like to go out and play 18 holes. When did you first start playing?
It's funny, because if you told me 10 years ago that I'd be playing golf, I would have said absolutely no chance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I said, what are you doing going around hitting the ball for 5 hours? Like, no way.
And there was around a field.
Exactly.
Trying to get it in a hole.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
No chance. And I remember when I was at Bath, one of my good friends, Matt Banahan, used to always leave training. Like, he was the first to leave to go play golf. And I was like, mate, how the hell are you, like, this is your job and you're leaving to go play golf. Like, come on. And anyway, it got to, when I moved to Leicester, I ended up like Matt Banahan. I was leaving training to go play golf as well. It's when it gets you. And
it does, yeah.
Yeah, it was in COVID I really started first playing, because it was, you know, the first thing that opened up that you could do with your friends. And, you know, we spoke about Tyrone earlier. He took it up at the same time. So it's always been like me, Tyrone, and one of our friends plays off scratch. So it's us three have been playing together really frequently since COVID. And
great.
You know, that kind of friendly competition between us three is what's really got me fully into it. And now it's just like, yeah, everyone's just battling against each other. Well, Mike's off scratch, so he's flying. But
Oh, yeah. And what's Tyrone off?
He's pretty 14 decent. To 16. Okay. It depends on whatever
he
wants to
come with. I remember his golf swing.
Yeah. He's got a nice swing, to be fair to him.
It's lefty. Not bad. He's a lefty, isn't he? Yeah, I remember the Brabazon course, playing the 10th at the Belfry a couple of years ago. He had a few goes. But no, very really great. It's such a great pastime if you're a professional sports person, because you can just go out and play with, you know, those from other teams. So you've got a good sort of group of mates now. What's your handicap?
14.
You're pretty good.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you saw.
Well, actually, it was
exactly.
It was good. No. It was good. No. When you've not, I've played since I was little. I think you've got that. Still, I can have some really awful rounds, but you've got that ingrained sort of swing in your mind. Whereas a lot of my girlfriends have taken the game up later. It's hand-eye. If you've got hand-eye coordination, it helps a lot. Yeah. But to actually be able to hit the ball to start with is pretty difficult, isn't it? But when you do hit it, the joy of hitting a good drive.
Oh, it's the best feeling in the world.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and it keeps you coming back. It keeps you coming back every time. Like, I don't know, I could shoot 118, but if I birdie the last,
that's it.
I'll be booking in at 7 a.m. the day after.
100% for that one shot. Yeah. It's always chasing it, isn't it? What's the strength to your game? Your putting, short game?
I would love to say one of them, but honestly, every day is different.
It's different.
Every day is different. Or more, which one's the worst, to be honest with you.
Like, and you played with Laurie Cantor recently.
I did, yeah.
And what did he say about your game?
He tried helping me, to be fair. I mean, he's a brilliant guy. And I think, yeah, he absolutely flew that day. He was 12 under and he barely broke stride. And I got the shanks after about 15 holes and literally couldn't complete the last four. And he was still trying to help me, still trying to, you know, just drop one down, mate. Try this.
And it's awful when someone's watching you and they're trying to help you and you can't be helped.
Let alone when they're a professional golfer who just wanted to get in and flip in, get into the gym. You know,
totally.
Like, this is his job.
Get away from it all.
But no, it was brilliant.
Awesome. And I'm just thinking about rugby, golf. Is there anything that rugby could learn from golf and what golf is doing right now? Coming up with lots of fun events. Mm. It seems like the game of golf is growing left, right and centre. Yeah. And we've got these new platforms for it. You can go into London and hit shots in a simulator. Mm. Do you ever do that?
I've played the simulator around here a fair bit. I think when the winter comes, I'll be there.
You'll be there.
I don't play golf in sub 10 degrees. So
fair weather golfer.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I hear
and
you.
I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yeah. Putting all the clothes on, taking them off, it's not fun, is it?
No way.
No. What about golf in the rain?
Also, no.
No.
Yeah.
It's raining, I'm not playing.
Yeah, I'm out. See you later.
I can just about feel it. Yeah.
No. I'm not trying to put on waterproofs to go play golf. It's supposed to be a days like this. This is what golf's for.
It is. It's gorgeous. Yeah. But can rugby learn anything from golf?
100%. I think you mentioned it there in terms of like the, not broadcasting platforms, but different ways for people to interact with golf. I think with like Bryson and his YouTube channel, you mentioned Tommy Fleetwood and his, I think that the way of, I guess, communicating with the younger fans, I think golf is doing that better through YouTube and things like that. And, you know, random challenges, you know, Bryson trying to hit it over his house, stuff like that.
That's
just
so
gets
good,
people
isn't
watching it.
It
do you know what I mean? And not in a way that feels like it's forced. It's just authentic and this is real. And then the other thing I would say is the fashion side of it. I think golf has become cool and is doubled down on being cool by some of the athletes. You know, I can't remember his... who was it? Someone wore a tracksuit the other day in a warm-up round and stuff like that. Jason Day, I think it was.
Oh, Jason Day.
Yes, I think it was Jason Day. And stuff like that. And, you know, people are now looking at, oh, what shoes is he wearing? And you see collaborations with really cool brands and golf wear. And I think that that's where rugby needs to get to. It needs to somehow harness the cool factor of whichever part of the sport they can in the same way that, that golf has done. So those are the two things that really jump out to me, the younger audience and the fashion side of it.
I think there's so many sort of avenues it can go down. I mean, you've got Justin Thomas, who likes the cardigans in the men's game, and then the women's game. I love figures like Charlie Hull, who just doesn't care and just goes for it. I think every female kind of wants to be Charlie in a way, just live her extraordinary, brilliant life, who almost did it at the AIG Women's Open, almost won the title. I'm sure she'll win a major soon. But I absolutely agree. I think the content of golf is really strong now, as is the fashion. Are you a perfectionist when you play golf?
In what way?
That you want to have a low score all the time, or do you just want to go out with your mates and have a bit of a giggle? Or a bit of both.
It's definitely a bit of both, but the one thing I can't deal with is playing bad with your mates and then getting roasted by them in the WhatsApp group afterwards. Like, that is one of the most painful experiences in the world. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? The banter and actually that community of you feeling part of this WhatsApp group, even if you may be the butt of all the jokes that time.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're not every time.
It's a good 70%.
Is it?
Yeah.
How far do you hit your driver?
I got no idea.
Because most people say, 300.
Nah, I would love to say 300. But Mike, the guy, you know, who I was saying is off scratch, he's flipping 5'8" or whatever it is. Yeah. And he outdrives me, so.
Does he?
So that's a real painful one.
It's all technique, Anthony.
Exactly.
Who's coaching you at the moment?
A good guy called Mark at Custom Golf Works, actually just around the corner from here.
Great.
He's been amazing to me.
Mark's doing a good job.
A brilliant job.
Yeah.
But once, actually, this is a funny story. When I first started playing golf in 2021, I once got refunded a lesson.
Okay.
He coached me and he said afterwards, "I've not helped you at all today, so I don't want to take any payment off you." That was an all-time low.
This is what Mark said.
No, this isn't Mark. This isn't Mark.
Okay, this is someone else.
Yes, this is someone else.
Can we name him or not?
I've actually forgotten his name, unfortunately. But
he said, "I've not helped you at all." Yeah. What did he do?
I don't know, but it was 45 minutes of absolute suffering.
Was there any joy in it? No.
Yeah, the process is all joy, isn't it?
It's all joy. I've literally never heard that.
No.
But I do feel sometimes when I have a lesson, I go backwards a few steps in order to go forward. Like, changing any part of your golf game is so different. Have you found that, though?
Oh, 100%.
Because it's a stationary sport when you're over the ball.
Yeah.
Rugby is obviously very reactionary. So what have you learned about yourself playing golf?
Oh, my God. The patience is just different level. It's actually, again, like, my psychologist that I worked with throughout my rugby career was like to me, you know, "You'll learn a lot from playing golf." And I was like, "Mate, that's not happening." And now he was like, "Oh, some of the stuff that you know, have learned through playing rugby, you'll start, you know, using in your golf game." I was also like, "Nah, it's not gonna happen because I'm never gonna take up golf." And now I can see what he means, like, between good shots and bad shots, how you know, because obviously you've got what, 2-3 minutes between shots, you know, how you mentally deal with either a brilliant shot or a bad shot or whatever is probably the thing I would say I've kind of, the more serious I've taken it, that's what I've tried to, like, kind of,
it's real, know. I think it's a real test of character. And you do dig deep on a golf course, especially when it's not going well. I've played in a couple of pro-ams where people have sort of turned to me and said, "I thought you were quite a good golfer." And you're like, "Oh gosh, today is a really bad day. It's a low day."
Yeah.
And then you can go out and play brilliant golf.
I know,
it flips so quickly. Yeah. And to be able to take it, I think golf is like a life lesson, every hole you play.
Yeah.
And you go on that journey, don't you, with those that you're playing with.
Yeah.
And I bet you can remember really special times on certain holes on certain golf courses with mates.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we played
Marco Simeone. Yeah, where's cool that you've played?
We played Marco Simeone this summer.
Amazing. Ryder Cup 2023.
Yeah. And we had to go up and down. I think it was 10th hole because we played the day before and it was finished all square. So we basically had to finish out, you know, which pair is going to win.
Right.
And so we basically went up and down 10, you know, after playing 18, maybe 3-4 times to decide who won.
Oh,
and eventually we won, and it was the best feeling ever, because I knew that I could roast those other two for the rest of the time we were in Italy. So it was
amazing.
That was brilliant for sure.
Oh, really lovely. It takes you to different parts of the world, doesn't it? And I'm trying to get you in a pro-am that you don't... You're not sure if you're going to play it.
Well,
to play
if I'm playing, I just hope that the spectators sign a waiver.
Just move away.
Because anything can happen.
Anthony, why do you think so many sportsmen and women turn to golf after their careers or during their careers as well?
Well, I think during your career is because it's a way to completely take your focus or brain away from your day-to-day worry or anxiety or whatever you might be feeling about, you know, playing, training, whatever it may be, and just having four or five hours of just, I guess, relaxing, but it's not really relaxing sometimes, but, you know, it just gives you something to completely focus on that's not, you know, your sport. And then I think, you know, once you've retired, for me anyway, I think that this is my way of still trying to compete. And it's not me against anyone. It's me against me trying to be as... get as low as I possibly can. I'll probably absolutely never be happy, but I think that that's where people find joy. And like you said, you know, going to different places, talking about golf courses, I think that, you know, now I find myself within, you know, the first 5 minutes of meeting someone, we can talk about golf, and it just leads you on to so many different things. So I think it breaks down barriers, and it also... you know, a lot of people find commonality, if that's a word, in golf. And that's just a nice thing to have, I think.
Yeah, and meet people from all different walks of life who you might not necessarily meet.
No, exactly.
Which is, and share stories.
Yeah,
yeah, 100%. It really brings people together. It's such a gorgeous game. And I feel so privileged to be part of it. My mum introduced me to golf when I was six, when I was tiny. And I had a wooden 7-iron that I used to go around the golf course with. Just one club.
Really?
And a putter.
Nice.
Yeah. She wasn't being cheap. She was just trying to teach me something. So. And then actually,
did it work or not?
It did, actually. Did it? Okay. It did, because I got really good with this wooden 7-iron.
Oh, nice.
Like, really good. Not saying I'm savvy or anything. Who was on the beach without a club. But no, it was, and you know, met a group of friends at a young age through Cheshire Golf that I'm still mates with, which is lovely. Right, Anthony, it's got to that point in our podcast where we're going to ask you some clubhouse curveballs.
Okay.
Three quick fire questions. Are you ready?
How quick fire are these? One word answers?
They're quite slow. No. Okay. no, they don't have, there's no timing,
okay,
actually.
Fine.
They're just three questions.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, sweet.
Would you rather play golf with a rugby ball or rugby with a golf ball, and why?
Rugby with a golf
ball?
The
holes would be enough to fit a rugby ball in. Would you rather play golf with a rugby ball, so whacking a rugby ball with a golf club, or playing rugby with a golf ball?
I think I'm going to take rugby with a golf ball.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you why, because imagine teeing off and hitting the rugby ball, and the way it bounces...
Peanut would go
anywhere.
Middle
of the fairway, but now you're in the rough.
Oh, that's so... Very exactly. Well done. You thought of that quickly. Yeah. That was quick fire.
Yeah.
If you could win one of the Open, the Masters, or the Ryder Cup, which would you take?
I think it's got to be the Masters.
Really?
The green jacket, and then, you know, the Champions dinner the year afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. You're just getting rid of the oldest one, the Open, and the team environment.
Yeah, sorry, man.
You've gone USA, haven't you?
Selfish.
That's fine. What would your Champions dinner be?
Nigerian food.
Would it?
My mum's Nigerian food, yeah.
That's so cool. Give us an example. What'd she cook?
It's called a goosey soup. It wouldn't go down very well, but I would love it.
Would you? What's in the goosey soup?
It's like melon seeds in a soup, and then you've got like pounded yam, and you use your hands to scoop it up.
So. That sounds pretty healthy as well.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
It's very heavy.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay, I'm going to Google that when I get home. What's the most unique thing we've found in, that would be found in or on your golf bag when you're playing a round of golf?
I've actually got about it must be, I want to say 60 years old, 50, 60 years old, golf ball. My granddad's golf ball is in my bag.
That's so lovely.
Yeah. I found it when I wasn't playing golf and I kept it, and now I play golf, it's in there.
You're never going to use it though.
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
I'm feeling like it's giving me good luck, but it might have to go pretty soon.
Okay.
Sorry, Grandad.
Sorry, Grandad. No, it's not really luck. What's numbers on it? Do you know? Remember?
I don't know, but it's a Dunlop Warwick. So it's old school. I mean, if you see it, you'd know it's old.
Probably be difficult to play with.
Yeah, yeah. I need all the help I can get. So that's staying in the bag.
That's staying in there. But you think of your granddad. Yeah. What snacks do you have around the golf course as well?
It depends what mood I'm in, but you can't go wrong with those chili nuts.
Oh yeah, lovely.
They're amazing.
Our producer's nodding. Yeah. Likes the chili nuts.
Exactly. That's my go-to usually.
Bit dry, I'd need a drink.
Yeah, 100%. Chase it down with a Guinness. Laughing.
Guinness.
Yeah. As you can see, my nutrition has gone to absolute.
I did have to laugh actually at your Instagram story saying one protein bar was going to cure 3 weeks of being drinking alcohol in Australia.
Yeah. It focused on liver health, so I was hoping it did.
It said liver,
exactly,
didn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Liver clear or something. Yeah. Well done, you. Oh no, you did a lot of hard work down there as well, and I'm sure they loved having you. Before we go, Anthony, I just want to ask you one important question. Which you have answered to quite a big extent, but once more, why golf? Why are you part of the golfing community?
I think from a purely individual and kind of selfish perspective, first and foremost, I want to see how good I can be at golf because it's such a challenging sport. You know, like you said, one day you can play amazing, the next day you can play terrible. And I just want to see how far I can take it almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm fully addicted now, so I don't have much choice. But then the other side of it is obviously, you know, being able to escape for 4 or 5 hours with some of your closest friends. And sometimes, like you said, meet new people out there. It's go to amazing places to play. I think it's just, it covers off so many different things that, you know, I can fully understand why I'm addicted and how people can get addicted so quickly, because it's just an amazing sport.
So true. Well, thank you for being on Why Golf. And no, I know you're a big Victor Cruz fan as well.
I am.
He's been on the show. Do you want to say a quick hi to Victor?
I've heard. Yeah, Victor Cruz, you were the man at the Giants, mate. You got me into it. So shout out you.
Awesome. I'm sure he will reply because he does listen.
Really? Okay.
Thank you. He's honestly such an awesome bloke, as you know. Yeah. Really lovely. And I've seen a man just go past on an electric scooter with his golf bag on the front.
I need one of those.
They're amazing. Yeah. We're open for any suggestions. If anyone wants to send us one each, that'd be great. Yeah. And so you've been great fun, and I really hope to see you on the golf course very soon.
Thank you, Di.
Thanks so much. That's it for today. Don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast provider, and we're available on all the social media channels as well. We'll be back very soon. This is Why Golf, brought to you by Skyscanner.